Hello and welcome to Nightcap with Jim. I am the titular Jim, and tonight we'll be beginning our three-part series on the Mission Impossible franchise. Tonight, starting with Mission Impossible 1 and Mission Impossible 2. For more content you may enjoy, please check out our Morning Mogami podcast and our other social media content at Mogami Players on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and YouTube. Let's get into it. All right, very quickly, before we get into the podcast proper, I just want to make a quick announcement. There will not be any music appearing in my podcast now or in the future. And if you go back and listen to the podcast on Anchor, you'll note that I've taken all the music out of my previous episodes as well. Apologies, but something we just had to do, so there's not going to be any music. For those of you who listen to this on other platforms, obviously this doesn't affect your listening experience at all, so it's just for Anchor, people who've listened to it on Anchor. But anyway, no more music, so... but anyway, let's jump into it. Mission Impossible. Before I go into it, I just want to say, like, I love this franchise very much. You know, it's been a favorite of mine since I was a kid. And, you know, I've really grown up with these movies, and it's just been such a fun ride, you know. I can't wait this week to go and check out, go and see Fallout in theaters. Just so excited for that. It looks so insane, but yeah, it's gonna be fun. But anyway, so I'm gonna tell you a little bit about how I'm gonna do this really quick before we really jump into it. I am gonna be discussing some spoilers here and there, so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna do two segments each on these films. So, and the second segment will be the one with spoilers, so that way if you haven't seen the movies, and that's how I'm going to do it throughout this entire series. So if you haven't seen any of the movies, you can listen to the first segment, which will be spoiler free, you know, get some good stuff out of that, and then you can skip the spoiler segments. And you know, if that first segment makes you if you've been wanting to see the movies and then you go and see them, then you can come back and check out the spoiler stuff, which is where I'll kind of discuss, you know, some problems that I have. Like, mostly, like, issues I have with the movies will be in the spoiler part, because they're, you know, stuff that spoils. So, you know, but anyway, enough announcements. Let's get into it. So we start with Mission Impossible, directed by Brian De Palma. This is my least favorite of the films, and we'll be getting into that, but I still like it. Out of 10, I would rate this the first movie a 7. It's pretty well made, but there's a couple of little things that I take a little bit of issue with. Brian De Palma went a little overboard on some of the Dutch angles, like, just a little bit too much, some, you know, in a couple of stuff. But that's really, you know, and then it's just really slow to me. Just really, really slow, and especially where you see how the franchise has evolved over the years, it's you know, the least action-y for sure. And there's only, one of the reasons it's so, like, kind of draggy is because there's only three, like, set pieces or sequences, if you will. And that's Prague and the sequence in Langley, Virginia at the CIA headquarters, and the train at the climax of the film. And when you spend so much time in just those places like that, just three spots, you know, it can get kind of, you know, draggy. And, you know, sometimes it can work depending on, you know, the writing and the performances and stuff. And sometimes it can be like this one. Now, to be fair, these guys were literally writing the script in between takes in certain cases. So, you know, it's a very thrown together movie, but still somehow works, which is interesting. And I think part of that does have to do with the cast, which is, it's a pretty good cast, you know. You got John Voight, Henry Cesarini, however you say his name, Jean Reno, Kristen Scott Thomas, Vanessa Redgrave, and our first Mission Impossible woman, I don't know what she'd, the MI girls or whatever, played by Emmanuel Béart. So that's, you know, and it's a pretty good cast, you know. One of the funniest things that I found out, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I heard this little bit of trivia how that George Clooney was offered the role of Ethan Hunt, and I think about that for a, you know, I thought about that for a minute, and I really just was like, what? Like, thank fuck that he didn't take the job if he was offered it, because, like, Mission Impossible would not be what it is without Tom Cruise. It just wouldn't, you know? He's really the driving force behind all of these movies. You know, he does a lot of work creating the stories. He you know, works a lot with the screenwriters and the directors to craft the story and the action. And, you know, of course, you know, his incredible stunt work that were, you know, and this franchise is known for doing everything as practically as possible with Tom Cruise right there, so you can see his face and know that he's the one doing it, so that we're never taken out of the movie for an instant because we see, you know, a stunt double. And that's amazing. You know, you really, really got to hand it to Tom Cruise for being just so down to, you know, do these kinds of stunts, especially some of them are pretty dangerous, you know. You know, you're talking about, you know, $80 million on this on this first movie alone, and then, you know, the budget just kept going up and up and up as it moved, as, you know, the series has evolved. And you think about, you know, a studio investing 80, 100, 100 plus, 120 plus, 150 plus million dollars into a movie where the lead star, the guy who's at the top of the casting sheet, you know, he's number one. He's there almost every day, if not every day, because he's in almost every scene, you know. And him doing these incredibly dangerous stunts and getting injured or possibly dying. and it's a real risk for these, for you know, for the studio, you know. And you just think about that and you go, well, these guys, you know, it's obvious, it's very clear that, you know, there's a lot of faith in Tom Cruise and the stunt team. Because if there wasn't, then there's no way that they would throw this kind of money, these kind of figures, around, and allow this you know, one of the biggest movie stars in the world to, you know, almost drown in this stunt, in this, you know, aquarium based restaurant where, you know, you got water coming down, cascading down, and, you know, if Tom Cruise is off step, then he just gets. You know, or on a train with, you know, 140 mile an hour winds, getting shot in his face, just incredible stuff. You know, I mean, and that train sequence is interesting because it's really the only sequence in the franchise that's just not for real. you know, I mean, everything else is for real one way or the other, but the train sequence was actually, you know, mostly shot on green screen, and the wind effects were used because Tom Cruise had trained on a skydiving simulator, and you may have seen some of these machines before. They've popped up here and there in, you know, like TV show episode here or there, or, you know, a movie here or there, or, you know, in documentaries or, you know, whatever. And so they searched around and they bought one so that they could shoot 140 miles an hour worth of wind in Tom Cruise and John Voight's face. You know, just it's still pretty crazy, but, you know, it's just not, they're not actually on top of a, you know, train going 140, which, I mean, you know, they probably couldn't have done that anyway, because I don't know a lot of trains that can go 140 miles an hour or you know, even 100. But, you know, it's still, they pulled it off. I mean, to be fair, like, it's the first movie in the franchise, and trying to do a stunt like that with an $80 million budget and nobody really wanting to, you know, I mean, across the board, except for probably Tom Cruise, you know, wanting to actually do this for real, you know, it's just not going to happen. You know, luckily the movie was successful enough that they got to do sequels. So, and that's how the, you know, that's how we see this crazy evolution of amazing stunts. Not everybody likes this movie, though. The original series, now, just in case you don't know, which I think is funny, because even though, because we all think of Mission Impossible as the movies with Tom Cruise, but, for those of you who don't know, or don't pay attention during credit sequences, which is fair enough, this is actually based on an old television show called Mission Impossible, and, the thing that's, interesting about it is that the movies are nothing like the show. The show is much more clever in terms of, you know, it's much more thought out in terms of them just being like, the goal for them is to get in and out and complete the mission without anybody knowing that they were there. And that's what the show strived for, strived to achieve. And so the original series cast was actually all offered cameos in the film, and if they had accepted, then they would all have been killed off in the opening sequence. But none of them were feeling that at all, so all of them turned it down. Martin Landau especially, described his disgust with how the movie took it in this whole different direction. And even fans of the original show didn't like it, which, you know, is kind of strange, because Brian De Palma and Tom Cruise both wanted to work on this movie because they were fans of the original show. So, I mean, it's just one of those things, you know, where you have source material that you're adapting to a new medium, and, you know, you can either do exactly the same thing that the source material does, or you can make it its own thing. And you know, some people are going to be okay with that, and some people aren't. So, you know, that's just how it is. But yeah, it's good stuff, you know. But yeah, it's just, this movie is just not my favorite. It's good, it's just not great. And, you know, again, it's just like, it gets really draggy in places. I'm probably not going to do a second segment of spoilers on this, because I've pretty much covered all my bases here. So, I'm going to take a little break, and we're going to come back with Mission Impossible 2. Stay tuned. Hey, Nightcap listeners, this is Heath from Morning Mungami, the podcast that you want to listen to start your day off right. Currently, we're doing a three-part series where me and the Mungami players sit down and we talk about the film genre, mockumentaries. So you're not going to want to miss that. Tune in Fridays, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, only at Mungami Players. And I mean, it's the best morning show in the world. Why would you want to miss it? All right, so now we're back with Mission Impossible 2. This is actually one of my favorite movies of the franchise, despite it being one of the lowest rated of the franchise. On IMDb, it has only a 6.1 rating, whereas I would give it an 8. Now, there's plenty of reasons for that, and I'm going to get into that in a minute, but we start off with John Woo, who is the new director of Mission Impossible, and new cast with DeGray Scott as the villain, Tandy Newton as the new Mission Impossible girl. We got Brendan Gleeson in the mix as well, and that's cool because him and Tom Cruise would go on to work together again in Edge of Tomorrow. And Hans Zimmer coming in and doing the music. Now, Hans Zimmer is amazing. He's one of the best composers of all time. But this movie, he kind of lets me down a little bit. The music in this movie is kind of meh. You know, the only real notable exception being the rendition of the theme song. This movie has a very hard rock version of the theme, and I love it. It's amazing. But the rest of the music is kind of it gets the job done, but it's just not quite what I would expect from Hans Zimmer. But John Woo, dude, like, John Woo is amazing. If you don't know who John Woo is, if you don't know his movies, you need to get your life together, because he's just amazing. He makes some of the best action movies ever made, including Hard Boiled, which is just absolutely extraordinary. If you're just a fan of pure action movies, John Woo has got to be somebody that you know and pay attention to, because he's absolutely a master of action, and he really brings that skill set to Mission Impossible, and delivers some really high octane, really amazing action sequences, which are just amazing and fantastic. Some just kind of funny facts for you. Tom Cruise apparently lied to the film's insurers about the stunts, and said that, he was going to let the stunt crew do most of the heavy lifting, when in fact he did 95% of the stunts himself, including, hanging off a cliff face, the motor, this amazing motorcycle chase sequence, this little kind of flirty dance of a car chase that happens towards the beginning of the movie, this one bit where there's an explosion while he's on the motorcycle, and this big fireball, and he drives right straight through it on the motorcycle without any gel or any other protective anything. So, this is really where we start. This movie is really where we start to get to see how that Tom Cruise is out of his goddamn mind. And just is willing to do these incredibly dangerous stunts all for the sake of making a movie. And, it's amazing, but at the same time, it's like, what the hell is wrong with you? we got a knife. So in this final climactic battle of the film between Ethan Hunt and the villain, Sean Ambrose, the villain pulls out a knife and goes to stab him in the face, and he's on top of him as they're on the ground, and the knife point comes to within a quarter inch of Ethan Hunt's eye, and they did this for real. and the way they did it was they attached the knife to a cable. So DeGray Scott is on top of him, on top of Tom Cruise, and he's really putting all this effort into it to make it look real. And the cable, was measured there so that it was just, not so Cruise didn't get stabbed in the freaking eye. and that's just, that's insane. I would never let someone put a knife a quarter inch away from my eye. That's just ridiculous. that's just insane. Some other, just fun stuff for you. Ian McKellen was actually offered the role of Mission Commander, which is played by Sir Anthony Hopkins in the movie. And Sir Ian McKellen turn it down, which is really great news for all of us Lord of the Rings and X-Men fans, because this movie had some production issues and went over time. And if Ian McKellen had said yes and taken the role in this movie, he wouldn't have been Gandalf and he wouldn't have been Magneto. So, you know, but also that's another funny little thing is that DuGray Scott was actually originally offered Wolverine, and because he did do this movie, he couldn't do Wolverine, and so now, and because of that, we got Hugh Jackman's epic performances, you know, over the past, you know, almost 20 years. So, you know, this movie kind of saved the X-Men franchise in a way, you know. The mask effect. Now, we can't talk about Mission Impossible without talking about the masks. It's one of the most insane, you know, effects that I've ever come across. That seems like it would be so simple to do, and in some cases it might be. So, for instance, on this film, what they did is they shot Tom on a green screen and had him put his hand, you know, to his face, and, you know, like he was ripping off the mask, and then they had DuGray Scott with a mask with sensors on it make the same move, and then they superimposed Tom's face onto the mask with sensors, and that's how they, you know, achieved that effect. It seems like such the simplest thing to do, and you know, and I would agree, but there is this, you know, it's all about, you know, you gotta get it just right. So it's incredibly simple in its execution, but it's gotta be just right for it to actually work. And I think, you know, that really comes down to John Woo and his attention to detail, because he's just very masterful at a lot of this kind of stuff. Originally, though, his cut of the film ran 3.5 hours long, and the studio came back and said, "You're going to take out at least 1.5 hours of this, because we're not putting it out unless it's, you know, 2 hours max." So apparently there are plot holes and continuity errors. I didn't really notice them too much, possibly just because I was enjoying watching the movie again. I definitely get into movies really easily, so I tend not to notice things sometimes because I'm just watching the movie for enjoyment purposes, and not necessarily as an exercise of an exercise of analyzation. But I will say there are a couple of little things. So, like, at the beginning, at the top of the film in the first act, Ethan Hunt is sent to recruit this thief, played by Tandy Newton. After this flirty dance of a car chase that they have, there's a little bit of an accident, and, you know, she almost bites it, and he saves her life. And then they boink and are apparently just in love. That kind of bothers me, because it's this classic, you know, movie, and, like, pretty much exclusively happens in movies. I don't really see it too much in television. You know, this one-night stand, fall-in-love, itis. This, you know, fall-in-love after a one-night stand itis disease. And, you know, perhaps the original cut that John Woo has actually has that development of character where it makes sense for them to have such intense feelings for each other. I mean, to be fair, like, there was the whole, you know, like, she almost died kind of situation. And, you know, it's pretty obvious from the outset that Ethan Hunt is super into this woman. But still, you know, it just, that just, that's the kind of thing that rubs me the wrong way a little bit. It's just because it doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, maybe it does happen in real life. I've never seen it or experienced it. This whole, you know, love at first, almost had a life or death situation kind of thing. But I'm sure it happens. I mean, there's the whole Nightingale effect with nurses and their patients and stuff like that. So, you know, and the whole savior, like falling in love with the savior, you know, that, you know, someone who saves your life. So, I mean, there's examples of it, but, you know, it seems unrealistic to me, especially because, like, that, the real life kind of stuff, you know, either doesn't happen or it ends badly. Whereas when it happens in the movies and stuff, it usually means that they're going to be together forever. So, you know, that's just kind of one of the things that's kind of me. I don't know about that. but, you know, another little fun thing is this is the only movie as of Rogue Nation. And I'm not going to, because, you know, going to see Fallout this week. This is the only movie that has Ethan Hunt actually working for the IMF. Now, because I have seen the rest of the franchise, I know what the rest of the stuff is. So the first movie, he's on the run because the opening operation was a mole hunt. So the IMF and other relevant intelligence agencies think that Ethan's the mole, so he's on the run trying to prove his innocence. Mission Impossible 3, you know, there's some stuff going on there, and then 4, and then 5, and then so all these other movies, he's not actually working for IMF. From a technical standpoint, so this is actually a unique movie in that this is the only one that he's actually, you know, the IMF is on his side and they're not trying to chase him down. They're not, you know, he's not disavowed or any of that stuff, so it makes for a pretty interesting mission, because he's pretty much got everything he needs to get the job done in terms of support, you know, logistical and technical support, which is cool. And this is a unique movie too because of John Woo again, and so it's pretty heavy on the gunfights in comparison to, you know, some of the other movies, especially the first one, which is the only one that doesn't have Ethan firing a gun. This one, though, is pretty gunfight heavy, and that definitely comes down to John Woo, you know, because, again, he's this masterful action director, and he does these amazing, beautiful, incredible gunfights in his films that are just just unreal, you know, kind of stuff. And it's just so much fun, you know, watching some of these sequences, because he's very stylistic when it comes to his gun battles, Mr. Woo, and so you know, he does a lot of dual wielding and you know, tricks and stuff, and you know, like, you know, flips and, you know, all this kind of cool stuff. So it's just a lot of fun, you know. And you get some really cool stuff out of some of it, especially when you got an actor like Tom Cruise, who's, you know, very happy to do his own stunt work. So you get some really cool stuff out of a guy like that. You know, it definitely kind of reminds me of the relationship John Woo has with, you know, Chow Yun-fat, who starred in, you know, several of John Woo's films. Because Chow Yun-fat, he's the kind of actor, you know, that he's not just sitting, you know, in his trailer or you know, sitting around on set waiting for the next setup. He's the kind of guy that's, you know, helping the lighting guys set up their lights. He's the kind of guy who's helping, you know, the set dressers, you know, push a car, you know, over into this spot. You know, he's got his wife on set, and, you know, you get sick and she's bringing you soup, you know, to help you feel better. So, you know, it just makes for a really interesting kind of relationship when you have a guy who's so dedicated to the movie. And Tom is like that, but in a different way. He's not doing this exact kind of stuff that Chow Yun-fat does, but his dedication to his art, to making his movies, You know, he's extremely passionate and dedicated. So when you have two people who hook up like that, who, you know, you get some pretty special stuff. And again, with Mission Impossible 2, we really kick off the whole, you know, big action set pieces, incredible stunts that the Mission Impossible franchise is now synonymous with. You know, you can't have a Mission Impossible without some kind of crazy death-defying stunts anymore. Which is amazing. 'Cause it, you know, it just lends itself to some of the most insane things ever put to film, you know, which is amazing. So we really have, you know, obviously Tom Cruise, like I said, he's integral to the movies, and he's really the driving force behind them, but we really have John Woo to thank for really getting us to where we are now with the Mission Impossible franchise. And there's not going to be any spoilers in this episode either, so I think we're all good to go. Got it all, I think I got everything out that I wanted to talk about so far, so yeah. That's going to do it. That's going to be our show for tonight. Thank you so much for listening. Please tune in to our morning show with Heath. I do apologize. On my last podcast, I did say he was going to release an episode last Friday. Unfortunately, he was unable to record a segment with one of his guest stars. So that's why that didn't happen. But don't worry. He's going to get it done, and it's going to come out, and it's going to be good. So we'll let you know when that's gonna happen. But he's got plenty of episodes up, so check those out because they're really good. He does really quality stuff. Check out our other social media content as well at Manga Me Players on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and YouTube. Thanks again for stopping by for a nightcap. Good night.